listeners, and welcome to Deutsche Grammophon's international podcast series. I'm Sarah Willis, and I'm happy to be podcasting for you with the Yellow Label's star-studded cast of musicians as my guests. Today, sitting opposite me in the Deutsche Grammophon offices in Berlin is the gorgeous Camille Thomas, whose second album for Deutsche Grammophon is called Voice of Hope. The cello is my second favorite instrument, after the horn, of course, and I loved hearing Camille sing with her cello on this album. Camille, bienvenue. It's great to see you again.
Yes, great to be here.
Last time we saw each other, we basically only talked about shoes. Do you remember?
I do.
It was at the Echo Classics in Hamburg, and you'd just come off stage, and you played with Xenia, played a wonderful duo, accordion and cello. And I said, oh, bravo, and I looked down at your shoes, and I wanted to know everything about your shoes. We're probably not allowed to do any advertising, but they have beautiful red soles.
Yes. They're special. And you're very high.
Very high. You're very tall. How do you feel on stage when you're wearing such high shoes? Because sometimes, you know, I wear the same shoes on stage, the ones with the red soles, but I sometimes feel a little bit wobbly if I have to walk far.
Now, I'm very happy that I can sit. When I just have to go from one point to my seat. that's the goal. And then if I... It is actually almost... The most difficult part is done.
Okay,
then I just have to play. Easy, easy.
Dear listeners, when you look at some of Camille's videos, please notice her shoes. They are very, very
not
beautiful.
Not only, please.
Not only, of course. The cello playing is the first thing you notice. The dresses are pretty fabulous, too. I was thinking of you the other day because the Labeck sisters are known for their amazing piano playing, but they're also known for this incredible French haute couture that they wear. They have all the designers making things for them. Is this an advantage of being a French-Belgian cellist? Do you have designers running after you and saying, hey, let me make you a dress?
Yeah, they're not running after me in the street, literally, but you know how things happen. No, it's true that I'm very happy to have very good contact and connections with designers, with very inspiring people. And what I like is to connect to things that I wear with a piece. And I think a concert is a show,
it's
in
an
a
event,
way,
yeah.
Because people come, listen, and watch, and as a respect for the music, for the audience, and also... Actually, it helps me also, you know, it's like I put my, when I put on my dress, I become a little bit a character of what I will be playing. It's a little bit like being
an actor
and an actress. And when I play, I try to really become the piece. I'm not anymore Camille, I'm Elgar Concerto or Fazilsay, and I'm all the characters in the piece. I'm speaking, I'm suffering with them, I have the joy, and it's a very stupid thing, but when I put the dress that I choose for this concert, it's a global thing, and I don't know, I become then, it helped me going in my bubble and becoming the music.
It's not stupid at all, I totally understand. I wish often as an orchestral musician I could wear something other than just black trousers, you know, because that's exactly it. The different. I noticed that when I was watching videos of you, your dresses really suit your pieces.
It's like a costume, a little bit.
So you're here in Berlin, your old hometown. Do you feel nostalgic when you come back to Berlin?
Yes, I love it. I love because it's quiet, and I always have the feeling like everything is possible in Berlin. There is this energy, and also nobody is watching you. I had this feeling, I went to the Hans Eisler, and I arrived in Berlin, I was 18.
So 18, that's a very young age to be set loose alone in Berlin.
That was perfect. Yeah. Actually, my first night in Berlin, I remember my mother came with me, and then she went back, and I went with her to the night train, because at that time we took the night train.
Were you sad?
I was sad 2 minutes. I was like, oh, I'm all alone. And then 2 minutes later, I was walking in the street, and I was like, my God, it's so nice. And this first evening, I walked to the Berlin Philharmonie. I thought they just want to see. And then I met two French people that also, like me, they just started studying in Hans Eisler, and they also wanted to see. So we bought tickets, and my first evening was listening to Berlin Phil.
What an honor. I wonder if I was playing.
For sure.
That would make me feel really old.
It was 2006.
I was there just about. Goodness.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I heard you my first night in Berlin, and
here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
We're in the offices of the Deutsche Grammophon, beautiful location here in the Universal Music Building, looking out onto the Spree. You know, you can't imagine the history that had gone on. This was like the East, and literally just over there was the West. You can hardly believe it, that people used to try and swim across there.
It's crazy.
An inspiring building, I find. Yeah. You are here because your new album is coming out. Actually, most people think that you would just record the album and then that's it, then it's just put out. But there's a lot of work involved. So tell us, what are you doing here today and what is actually involved in bringing out an album?
Yeah, there is already so many things recorded. And why doing again recording? Why putting some music? And it's because I believe we can share messages. We can share Botschaften. So how do you say
that? Messages.
Yeah, messages. Yeah. And I was thinking a lot what I wanted to record and if I wanted to record and what, because, you have to have something to say, I think. So it's been 3 years since I recorded the first one, and I'm so happy that I took this time. I think this recording, Now Voice of Hope, is meaningful in many ways, and I'm very happy about it. And I'm here to explain why. That's now the job.
So you have
explain.
To do a lot of publicity around it.
Yes.
Because it's been going on for 3 years, but it's finally ready to come out.
Yes, it's true. It's a very, very long process because, of course, first you think and you wait for the inspiration to hit you. So it takes some time. And first, Fazil Say wrote this piece for me, this cello concerto called Never Give Up. That was 4 years ago he started, and 3 years ago I played the premiere in Paris.
Which was a really important place to play it because it's based on the terror attacks that happened in
Bataclan.
Exactly.
He wrote this after the terror attack in Bataclan and in Istanbul. And that's why the piece is called Never Give Up, because the idea of the piece is that we should never give up on hope, on the human being, on beauty with a big B. And since premiere in Paris, I played it in Belgium, I played it in in Germany, in Austria.
I have to explain to the listeners, if you live in Berlin and you don't come from Germany, you end up speaking this Dinglish, this sort of mixture of German, English, and it's just such a mixture of languages. So I love it. So
and when you're French, you do that with a French accent on both languages.
We love the French accent.
It's terrible. That's how it is. We cannot help it.
No.
Yeah, I played it in Italy, and everywhere. I was so moved by the reaction of the public. This piece has a huge impact because it speaks about our life today. It speaks about this trauma that we all have from this attack. And it's the real power of music to be a catharsis, to help people first to maybe to cry, but then to overcome the pain. And the concerto brings you into a journey into our lives. So first, the cello is like a human voice who all around the concerto who is speaking. It starts alone, it finishes alone.
And the birds finish.
Yes,
the
actually,
birds
it's
the
true.
Water.
Birds and the water finish.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and it's so the first movement, it explains a little bit the conflict between civilization, between religions, within ourselves also, everything that we feel today. This little, that we don't understand why people cannot talk, why are this big fear of each other. And I think this is really the feeling that you have when you listen, this first movement. And then he created it with this Bataclan attack. And
it scared the life out of me, the second movement, I must say. If you're not expecting it, and I listened to it before I read your notes, which are
nice.
Beautifully written, by the way, really, the beautiful notes in the album and the lining, the booklet, but I hadn't read them yet. So I was listening along thinking, what a beautiful elegy, a melody, and all of a sudden the percussion started. And that's quite shocking.
That's
it sounds like
shocking.
A gun.
Yeah, and when I play it every time, I'm like...
Yeah, can imagine.
And it's funny because you can feel all the orchestra, so it's shocked because, it's... He wrote Kalashnikov on the score.
Ah, he did.
And in Paris, for the premiere, Fazil Say, he's not the guy who speaks a lot. You know, everything in the music, and then he wants the interpreter to just feel it and play. And that's also very nice, you know, that it becomes your thing. But just there, he came on stage, and he said, so... you, Camille, the cello, and all the strings, you are the human, and you are crying in the Bataclan, and this percussion are the guy with the gun who killed without soul. And we are all like...
I'm getting goosebumps listening to that.
It was extremely strong, and every time I play it, I go out of myself. It's funny because it's the most tiring concerto for me to play, and I was wondering why. But it's because it's so emotional, and because it comes so deep because it's really things that we are living, these things. And then the third movement, it starts with birds and water sounds. And you go to the jungle, it's more like dancing, and it goes to the idea.
I thought for the percussionist guy, it's like the bolero, you know,
exactly.
He plays the same rhythm for like 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Do, 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 do. No, what is it? It's in seven. But it's very, very, it's very cool. And that puts you, brings you out with a smile on your face again.
And people go out of the concert hall with hope in their heart, and they wrote me that. I never received so many messages after a concerto. That's why I thought I really have to record it, I really have to give a life to this piece. Yeah. I want the world to hear it, because it's important.
I really, really enjoyed listening to it, and I was also thinking about modern pieces and modern concertos these days, because all of our instruments, you know, we are all dying to have new, great modern concertos. And I was listening recently to a horn concerto that was being premiered, and it was fantastically played and fantastically composed, but I wouldn't play it. I wouldn't put it on my stand and learn it. It was far too difficult for a start.
Yes.
And I didn't go out with this feeling like, okay, this is going to be a classic. Mm. Do you feel that that Fazil's piece could end up being played by lots of younger generations?
Actually, I do. Yes. It's funny because Fazil, when he sent me the score on WhatsApp,
he sent you the score on WhatsApp.
Yeah. he wrote me, "This will be a hit." And I was like, okay, you're very confident, my hair. Yeah. But yes, let's see. And no, I really think, and people are starting to play it.
Really? Has
yes,
it been performed
yes,
since?
Yes,
fantastic.
Yeah, by other cellists. And I think it will become the concerto of our time, the cello concerto, because it's also... As a cellist, it's also super nice to play because you go beyond the cello. You just not just play the cello, you also play Armenian flute at the beginning of the second movement. He invented this duduk sound, which
duduk
I never
is
heard.
Is a Armenian
oboe
instrument.
Exactly.
It sounds like it should be extinct. No, that was a dodo. duduk.
Exactly. And it's such a beautiful sound, like pure. You have the feeling you're sitting next to the Bosphorus, and it's.
But you don't play it on the duduk, you play it on the cello.
I play on the cello, but it's a very special technique. I play very high on the C string, and I have to play with a lot of bow, a lot of vibrato to create this impression of air in the sound and of. Very high, like whoa, like a voice again.
Yeah.
Also there is a lot of collegno, like very scary things. It's percussions that he transformed to Kalashnikov. I also have to do a lot of sounds, and I have the feeling I'm not only a cellist. I can become a lot of instrument. And,
fantastic. Yeah. Well, I hope it will become the cello piece of our generation. And I'm so proud that your name is on it. That's a wonderful thing to have a piece written for you.
Yeah, also it's one of the biggest things that happened to me. Actually, this for now, many things. I don't want to forget things. But this trust that Fazil had in me, I mean, it brought me so much. Because Fazil was since always one of my idols. As a pianist, you know, I feel when he plays, you're immediately taken. He's like burning on stage, and that's what I love with artists, that they give everything. There is no restriction, no fear, they just burn for you, for the music. And so I always admire him for that. And then I discover what he was writing. And first thing I heard was his first symphony. And it's so moving to see the two big heritage of our Occidental culture, big German orchestra, and connected to this Oriental instrument.
Yeah.
And the fact that they can communicate together. For me, he's a symbol of a possible peace also, you know, between these two parts of the world.
The concerto is like on the middle, it's like the island, and you've surrounded it. So you have your own piece.
Yeah.
And you surrounded it by other people's pieces. And you have a strong Jewish connection. You have the Kaddish, you start with Ravel's Kaddish, a Jewish prayer.
Yeah.
We have Kol Nidai, which was original for cello. Yeah. And almost at the very end, you put in John Williams. I love that.
Yes, imagining how you could make a story, a journey. I wanted, when I still really believe in this thing, like,
You're showing me this, we have the album here on the table with your beautiful picture on the front.
I really believe that when you put the CD on your player,
the physical CD,
the artist takes you into a journey. He wants to, like, it's like writing a book. You start somewhere and you finish somewhere, and in the middle you experience things. And hopefully, you at the end you're a little bit different, or you received something. Yeah. And I really believe that the order of the piece is like telling a story.
Do you do this yourself, or do you have a lot of help from Deutsche Grammophon? Do you discuss which pieces come where, or do you say, I want to do this?
It's a common work, of course, and there's many amazing people in Brain here, and they have so much experience. For me, it's important to hear what are their ideas, what are their feelings, but I think what the artist feels, I've learned to trust a little bit, even always more my feelings. Yeah. Because at the end, you have to say something and come from your heart, and it works, it touches people if it's sincere and if it's real. And that's what also I love with the Deutsche Grammophon people, is that they respect this. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it's always the artist. For example, I said I really want to start with Ravel, because I think this piece represents the album. It represents Orient and Occident. These two parts of the world, Orient and Occident, it represents the prayer. Mm-hmm. I think prayers are universal. It's this is a Jewish prayer, but it's music. It's just a way to speak to someone and something beyond us.
So it was good to start with this.
And exactly.
That was it. And then after that, you have some songs. And then the rest of it, you've done something which is quite daring, I must say. You've taken songs and arias that the biggest singers, you know, have sung, Maria Callas and Pavarotti and Jonas Kaufmann, and you've put them onto the cello. Yes. It's quite cheeky, actually.
Yes, it's a challenge. It's a big challenge. So after, I thought, this Fazil says, the cello is like a human voice on the whole concerto, and me as a cellist, I always try to sing. I never sing.
Can you sing really in real life?
Yeah.
In the shower?
Yeah. I love it. No, I did sing when I was young, and I love it, but I would not. It's much better when I sing with a cello.
But did you, I've got to ask you this, when you were doing the Bellini, the Casta Diva, you know, from Norma, which you finished the album with, did you sing along with Maria Callas?
Of course, I sing along with her since I'm 16, every day. No, but
You posted recently for Women's Day, you posted the video for singing it. It's such a classic.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. No, actually, I had two musical shocks in my life. Was when I was four and I asked, and my mother put it some CDs on, and I heard a cello, and I said, this is what I want to do. And since that day, I'm a cellist. It was very simple
for me. It sounds
so
cliché, but it's really true.
It's really true.
It's the same with me and the horn. The minute I played one note, that was my instrument.
Yeah.
That's just how it happens.
And it's not a job. It's part of yourself. It's, And
what did Yannick say? When you enter music, you enter a religion.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an existential goal, accomplishment. It's something that, I feel that I have something to give with the music. And there's no question of if is it tiring or if is it a lot of pressure or if it's just like that.
We play, it's sometimes hard for people who don't know about music and musicians and what we do, who maybe will be listening to this, and when we say, we give ourselves to the music, you know, it's like, well, how they play the notes. But for us, the notes are just, we're just transporting, and how we play them is hopefully what the composer would have liked, but also with all our soul, all our experiences and all our, you know, our traumas and our happy moments.
Yeah.
But nowhere you put them more into these sort of songs, right?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, what was the last sentence?
I agree with you. What was the question? Good answer. I mean, there's no better example for how to put your soul into the music than in these songs you've chosen for the album, because these great climaxes, you know, where you can just let go with your entire body. Can you do that on the cello?
yes, it's what I practice every day to let go. And I don't sing, but when you're a singer, it comes from here and it's very natural.
The horn playing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But cello, you have this instrument, but actually it's the same. It's come from here and then it has to be a very natural flus.
Yeah, a flow, a very
natural flow from your stomach, from your heart and your soul.
Well, the cello is part of your body, you know. Yeah. You are, yeah, that's why I think the cello, the horn and the cello are such, they can imitate the human voice so well because, you know, we sing out of our souls. You have the cello as part of you, you know, you're enclosing the whole thing. When I play the horn, I really do feel like I play out of my soul because I'm using my breath and to use it. You have the cello around, it, you know, it's part of your body. You are literally hugging the cello.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to explain why we use our souls to somebody that doesn't have that experience in music, but it's what we do.
Exactly.
Do you have a better way of explaining it?
No, I mean, I think it's like an actor also. Like I was just watching this Joker film and I thought, my God, it's very easy to imagine that for Joaquin Phoenix, it must have been a very difficult time, no? To dive in this darkness. To
great begin... for his family if he's living the Joker all the time.
No, but to become the evil. And also, but the evil that suffered so much that he became a bad guy. Yeah. I thought it's exactly the same. He's protected in a way because it's a role, but we are protected because
it's not our music, we are
playing, we are interpreters. Yeah. But when a concert is amazing, when magic happens, I think it's when the interpret became one with the music. And then it means that you don't have any protections anymore. You suffer with the music, or there is also joy, but you give everything you have. So you're empty and you're vulnerable, very vulnerable. You make you vulnerable, and that's a difficult thing, but that's the beauty of it. But then also, of course, that's why sometimes we say it's a difficult job, because it's...
It is a difficult job. I think all jobs, of course, have their difficulties, but we are giving ourselves. You know, any artist will say, you give yourself. And also, there's a lot more critic that comes back at you if you do something that people don't like. And you have to be quite brave, I think, in our job to go out there and bring out an album, you know, a new album like this.
First, to walk with high heels.
you have
to be very brave to walk on stage. But then, of course, it takes a lot of courage to come in front of 2,000 people and to play something stupid but by heart, and it's extremely difficult. I mean, you cannot really maybe see it. People know that when they try to play the piano or the violin, it doesn't sound good on horn. I cannot do anything.
The horn is just an instrument that you never know what's going to come out.
Exactly. And when I'm on stage, my finger, if it goes 2 millimeters too high, it's out of tune. And it's like very, very big... precise gymnastic. It's a lot of training, but at the end, you have just to go on stage and trust yourself that everything will work. But the thing that helped me a lot is to think that you have to accept that you're a human being, so shit can happen, and it's okay.
We won't beep that out. Beep!
No! And people will also not shout at you. I mean, it's also. I like
my mother
the idea.
Used to say it differently. She said, if it all goes wrong in the concert, when you come out, the buses will still be running. You know, it's like, okay, but it's not that big a deal.
Somehow it doesn't help me.
No, it doesn't.
When I'm on stage, it's the whole universe. It's a bit stupid, but suddenly it's so important. Everything. And I die inside when something goes wrong.
But it's good that it is so important.
Yeah. But I like also to take risks, and I like artists to take risks on stage to achieve this magical moment. Sometimes it's when you try, for example, to play extremely soft, you can take risks because it can maybe not sound or not sound well.
Your fingers are sweaty because you're nervous.
Exactly. Or if you want to vibrate a lot, it can also... But it's more difficult when you take risks, but then you give more, you touch more. And then... if there is a failure, mistake, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And the other thing is that I think that it's not about me, that when I come on stage, I'm just here to transmit something. but just a music, you know, I'm just a humble servant. No, and that, yeah, and it helped me so much that people are not here to watch me, they're here to listen
those
to
are
music.
Really great things to feel. I must admit, I don't always manage to do that, and the feeling afterwards, if it goes well, is indescribable. You know, it's such an elated feeling of joy. The feelings before the concert are different, though. Those where I think all artists would say the same. We suffer our biggest self-doubt. And I've often wished I'd had a different job before a concert. Yeah. Literally, I've wanted to be a gardener or a bird keeper.
Oh, that's nice.
Those are my two things. Because I'm not saying those jobs are a lot easier, but they would be maybe not so stressful as going in front of the stage in the Philharmonie sold out. You said in a film you would have preferred to be a housekeeper or a crepe seller. Some people didn't like that, but I actually loved it because those are two such wonderful jobs. And the people who do them, of course, have their own difficulties and their own stress. But for me, they sound like such, you know, enjoy. To make crepe, can you imagine how wonderful this would be? And this is what you meant. You weren't, you know, talking bad about housekeepers and crepe. You were praising them and saying what wonderful jobs.
No, exactly. I just said it was a difficult job. And of course, they are much more demanding physically and mentally. And I feel so privileged to play the music. I mean,
but in the minutes before, you sometimes think, oh, why
but
do
just
I do this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There is some moments of fear, enormous fear,
of course.
because you have to go and you have to make you completely naked and vulnerable in front of people, and then you just experience fear. Yeah.
This is what an album does, a new album, because you have to perform it live to promote it everywhere, but you're putting your soul out there as, you know, forever, ever, ever. And maybe it will be buried in one of these pods for the future generations, you know, or people from outer space. But this is you and your very personal album. And I think this is your first album with Deutsche Grammophon, were concertos. So you're playing other people's music. This is really very personal.
Yes. This is I also recorded some albums before, but this is a most personal album. And
it's scary to put that out.
Yes, it's scary and it's so beautiful at the same time. But it's true. And when you record, it's a very special, the mind and how you play it is a very special setting, because it's completely the opposite of what we do every day. What we do is the moment we play and we try to create a moment where time stops of eternity in a concert hall. And when you manage, it's amazing. But then it's gone, you take the bus, and hopefully people can keep that in their heart. When you record, you try to give your voice on some pieces, and you know that it will stay with you, and it will be how you play this. So then you think so much more how you want to present it. It's a very different pressure. And that's why I come back to what we were saying at the beginning. I want to tell a story. That's also why I choose pieces for the voice, because yeah, as I said, I'm not just playing notes. I want to speak. I want to cry with my cello. I want to sing. I want to dance, to laugh. And for me, it's so inspiring to play this Bellini, Castadiva, or Donizetti. I was listening to so many singers, and the words are missing, but I have other ingredients. I can work with sound colors. I can work with vibrato. I can work with dynamic, with time. So it's research that I love to do, because I think you can bring something else, actually, when you play with the cello. You said, I need courage to record Castadiva after La Calas. And it's true. It's a very, very big challenge. And at the beginning, I was not sure that we will put it on the CD. When we record it, I thought, let's record and let's see. But then I felt that it brings something different, maybe more intimate, maybe more direct, because a voice, a soprano voice, it's so big that sometimes it's not human anymore. You know, it's my dream. I love it. But with a cello, somehow I think it's closer for me to the human feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations, really. I really, really have enjoyed listening to this. And the product is beautiful. Your picture, the fact that you're not wearing high heels on the cover, I was a bit surprised, because I've only ever known you in high heels. But it's beautiful. The whole product is beautiful. And thank you for coming and talking to me about it. But you're not quite finished yet.
Oh.
We were talking about opening our soul and doing things that we fear.
Yeah.
I don't know if you fear this yet. I know you had a boyfriend who used to play the French horn, so you might be a little bit further than most of my guests. But I would like to challenge you to play like Maria Callas on the French horn. I have my French horn here. You have your beautiful Stradivari behind you that's on loan, isn't it, from the foundation in Japan?
Yes, Nippon Music Foundation.
Nippon Music Foundation, and it's beautiful. You can the wood, you can already tell that it sounds amazing.
I'm in love.
Yeah. Well, so my horn is here, and I'm just going to... Yeah, it's got some condensed water inside it from when I was practicing earlier. I'll just tip that onto the Deutsche Grammophon carpets here. In these days of hygiene, I brought you a freshly cleaned mouthpiece. That's for you.
Thank you.
And you see it, so... That wasn't Camille, that was me just warming up the horns, because a warm horn plays better than a cold horn. Camille now has her mouthpiece, and you're going to try and make a little buzz for me? Ah, yeah. Okay, so that was just on the mouthpiece. That was pretty good, actually. So now I am going to take out my mouthpiece, pass the horn over to you. In goes the mouthpiece. At least you know where it goes. That's already a real... Yeah, so usually you put your hand in the bell, but yeah, good. You've been taught well. So, ready?
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Very long time.
Okay, right. Ready? So here we go. The Deutsche Grammophon International Podcast Horn Challenge, taken by Camille Thomas. That scared me almost as much as the Kalashnikovs in the second movement of your concerto. Pretty good. I'd say you won that challenge. That was, you've done this before.
Who am I as a competitor?
Yeah, Lisa Batishvili, she played very daintily, like Charlie Chaplin. She went doot, 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 doot. Vikingor, yeah, well, you'll see. We will compare them all, and we'll ask the public to vote.
I hope you, yeah, please.
But that sounded not at all how you look.
No, but I don't sound how I look.
You don't?
In general.
Yes, you play with a very big sound, and I must say on the horn, you could hold your own in a Bruckner symphony.
Oh, I would love it.
Thank you for coming in, and I would say, could you play us out on the horn? And lovely to see you, and please come back soon and talk to us. So, Camille, take it away.
Okay?
Yes.
Second try.
Bravo!
Thank you. But I made a sound.
You made such a shout, really, like the Kalashnikovs. Honestly, amazing.